From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears, joined alongside here with Michael Levin, sports editor of the Arizona Daily Star, Ryan Finley. Fellas, we are back in the studio talking some Arizona Wildcats football because, they're not making a bowl game. So, here we are talking some off-season stuff. How's everybody doing? Michael, how's your off-season so far?
It's all right. Keeping busy. Got a couple of recruiting-related stories in the pipeline that I think people are going to like a lot that are coming out this weekend. So something to look forward to. You know, signing day is right around the corner, and the Arizona Bowl is coming up right after that. So busier than you'd think.
Yeah, you talk about off-season like there's an off-season. I mean, you go straight from, regular season into conference title games, into bowl game selection, into early signing day, which is, Tuesday coming up? Wednesday coming up. After that, everybody goes home for Christmas. Then you come back and there's another signing day and then early spring ball or late spring ball. It's insane. It's insane. For Arizona though, I mean, I think this is a really important week coming up for them.
Yes.
It's Kevin Sumlin. This is the class that we will start to judge Kevin Sumlin on. And, from everything we've seen and from reading some of the tea leaves, it looks like this might end up being a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that, recruiting class because a very important one. Kevin Sumlin's it's his very first one.
Right.
2018, it was technically his first
one. He got one guy.
But, yeah. Exactly.
Kevin Doyle.
So, we're going to talk more about his 2019 recruiting class coming up and just a little bit later in the podcast.
Good.
So guys, the 2019 Arizona football schedule was officially announced last week. 2 weeks ago, my weeks are off, but
it was
recently, the Arizona Wildcats football schedule was released, and I got to say, very interesting one at that. They open up against Hawaii, which is week zero.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a bye week, then they play NAU, Texas Tech, another bye week, and then they start conference play, and then here we are. There's three bye weeks.
To me, this is the Backstreet Boys season, right?
Backstreet Boys. I like Backstreet Boys. But I don't know.
Is it Backstreet Boys
or NSYNC?
NSYNC.
What's the song? What's the song?
NSYNC. Dang it! I thought I was so clever there. Bye. They have three byes this year coming up, and really sort of evenly spaced out. I think that this team will be rested if nothing else. The reality, though, is Michael, you can speak to this. This is a much tougher Pac-12 schedule, not only in terms of who you have to play, but where you have to play them. Than what Arizona had last year.
Yeah, we'll go through the whole thing here in a minute. But regarding the buys, I did kind of a deepish dive on this. You'll get over it, Ryan. you can find that story on the Wildcaster app or on Tucson.com. But I would say like the number one reason that they did not schedule another game was that it wasn't a big financial benefit for them to do so.
Okay.
Right? I think if it would have been that they probably would have figured out a way to do it. But they already have three home games in the month of September. They're all going to be late night starts. You're already playing an FCS team in Northern Arizona. It's hard to find teams that weren't otherwise going to be playing on the first weekend of the season. They tried to move that NAU game to, the August 31st, which would have given them a bye before Texas Tech. That didn't work out.
Right.
It just didn't make sense for them to do it. The cons outweighed the pros as far as scheduling another game. So you end up with this unique three bye schedule, the bye, as Ryan called it. And I think it's kind of cool. there's always like a big learning curve after the first game of the season, right? So this gives them an opportunity to have a whole week to kind of like assess where we're at, correct some mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get another bye heading into conference play, which is again, sort of a natural break. And then they play, the roughest stretch of the season by far, starting with that, UCLA. At Colorado versus Washington, at USC, at Stanford, and then finally a little let up versus Oregon State for homecoming, and then you get the third bye before the final stretch, which is no picnic either, at Oregon versus Utah, at Arizona State. they didn't have their loan buy this year until after week 10.
Right.
Right. And they were pretty darn beat up. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine like how different the season might have been if they had an earlier bye and they could have sat Khalil Tate down for a week without him having to miss a game? Maybe he comes back, plays like he did down the stretch, and maybe we're talking about a bowl game now instead of next year's schedule.
Okay. So let's look at this schedule now and say, okay, let's take this format and put it into this past year's schedule. I think it would have benefited them.
Of course. Absolutely.
Khalil Tate would have came back and he would have been healthy enough to carry Arizona throughout the season. But this schedule for 2019, I'd say the Pac-12, especially against the North teams with Washington, Stanford, I don't know if Arizona's results change.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Well, I still see them as a 6-6, 5-7 team regardless.
Yeah, I think what would have really benefited them this past year is that the coaching staff was still learning the team. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Sumlin talked a lot about you don't really know until you see them playing a game. If they had an early bye week last year, that would have given them time to sort of pause. Let's assess what we have, where we're going, maybe make some lineup changes, which is really hard to do when you have to shift into game plan mode the next week. I think the good news is Washington State is not on the schedule, and that is a team that has given them major trouble, especially up in Pullman.
That's a sentence. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, right, I mean, Washington and Stanford, I mean, two of the most physical teams with big offensive lines and big, strong defensive lines in the conference, usually that's not been a good matchup for Arizona.
And they still have Oregon, too.
Right. And Oregon's still on there.
Right. Well, you want to talk about just kind of the feel of a season, right? You know, sometimes you can go 5-7 and it feels like you're going 7-5 and vice versa.
That was this year.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, Arizona could open their season 3-0, right? And you really don't have to squint too hard to see it, right? Winning at Hawaii. Hawaii's not very good. NAU, you should beat even in your worst year. Texas Tech, new system under Matt Wells.
Beatable. Yeah.
Beatable, right? You're in Lubbock, but you know what?
No,
beatable.
It's here. No,
oh, it's here. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's here. Arizona.
Don't send me to Lubbock if I don't have to go. Right?
Honolulu. Good news, Michael. You're going to Honolulu. Bad news. Also Lubbock. They could start 3-0 and finish 4-8. Yeah. They could start 3-0 and finish 6-6. Their schedule after like September the 14th or so is brutal.
But they could all, okay. Obviously, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be next year, and we'll get to that topic here in a little bit. We don't know exactly what this team's going to look like. They could also be 5-0.
Sure.
It's not that crazy.
What,
at Hawaii.
UCLA, Colorado?
Yeah. Home versus UCLA, which is obviously they were way, you know, much improved at the end of the season, but Arizona lost by 1 point at the Rose Bowl without Khalil Tate, without Laith Freck playing for them. And then at Colorado, which is a team that's totally in transition, Arizona has had their number the last couple years. You know, then you get into that brutal stretch, the versus Washington, at USC, at Stanford. That's kind of the real make or break period. But I would say overall, it's a tougher schedule.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. By the way, what do you make, real quick as an aside, what do you make of Colorado's hire?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you're bringing in Mel Tucker is the guy, a defensive coordinator at Georgia. So, you know, he's going to have a lot of good recruiting connections, knows what a really good defense looks like, knows what SEC caliber athletes looks like. It's always tough though. And this was the case with Kevin Sumlin too. You're going from that place to sort of a mid-tier Pac-12 school. Can you bring in the same types of guys? And, you know, on this, it's hard to do that. So you have to be much better at evaluating. Mm-hmm. One of the more interesting hires, I thought, of what a lot of people have considered to be a kind of a boring coaching cycle with a lot of retread type guys.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It reminds me a lot of really when Arizona hired Mike Stoops. When Mike Stoops got here, he talked about being able to be sort of the outlier in the league that plays defense. Then he got here and he realized that he wasn't getting Oklahoma caliber players. Right. His first year, he said he had one guy, Darrell Lewis, who he thought could have played for him a year earlier at Oklahoma. I wonder if Mel Tucker doesn't run into a little bit of that in his first year at Colorado, where he looks around and goes, you know, when I had all the best players at Georgia, I could do a lot of things. At Colorado, where maybe you've got three or four players who would play at Georgia, you're limited in what you can do. Mm-hmm. To me, it's going to be so interesting. And I'm not sure, maybe Michael, you can fill me in, if he's announced a full staff yet. But I will be very curious to see what sort of an offense the Buffaloes run and if they try to kind of keep up with the Joneses or if they try to do something a little bit different.
He has not announced a full staff, but I think they have an offensive coordinator in place, mm-hmm. and I'm going to look it up here.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Jay Johnson, not that Jay Johnson, mm-hmm. not the baseball coach at Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Johnson, I'm going to read up on this here while you guys are filling mm-hmm. here.
Killing time. Michael,
Georgia staff, he was an offensive analyst before that, ran a record-setting offense at Louisiana Lafayette.
Oh, okay.
Worked for Kansas for 3 years as a QB coach. Mm-hmm. So there's some of the background there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I kind of like the idea of doing something different.
God, somebody has to in this league, don't they?
But I mean, like, Georgia Tech
right.
Is now what? They're not going to, I'm just assume they're not going to be an option team anymore, nope. right?
Right.
Like those days are over. They were the different team in the ACC and it
in Power 5 football.
Did well, yeah. It did, it worked well for them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy the Army Navy game, by the way, Ryan?
It's like watching a high school game. And here's the thing. I watch it every year. It's a wonderful game. The post game is incredible. I mean, I still remember.
The pregame is really cool too.
3 years ago or so when Navy or Army blew it at the end, I think they had a quarterback. Was it Steelhouse? Nathan Steelhouse. I'll tell you. His name was Nathan Steelhouse.
Sure.
And at the end of the game, I believe he fumbled like at the two going in. And then he had to stand there just weeping while they played Navy's fight song afterwards. And I think he may have blown off Joe Biden, who was down there to try to offer some words of encouragement after the game.
Blow off Joe Biden.
I can't blow off Joe Biden. I do like it, Michael, but I get about a quarter and a half into it and go, oh, yeah, it's low-level Division I football.
I miss the snow. Like the 2017 game yep. was so cool because it was snowing like the whole time. And then they, you know, that long field goal attempt at the end.
Is it always in Baltimore, the game?
Philadelphia or Baltimore?
Or Philadelphia.
It alternates. I believe it alternates.
It's Baltimore when it's at Navy, Philadelphia when it's at Army, because Army's in New York.
Right.
Somebody had a spectacular.
But not far from Pennsylvania.
Spectacular yeah. joke on Twitter saying that it was unfair to Navy that this game is always played on land. which kind of gave me the idea of what could they have this game on one of those aircraft carriers?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Could they
totally.
Do that?
How about
have they ever had a football? I know they've had basketball games on those, but I think that'd be kind of cool.
It'd be
especially
really
this time of year, like, be like really windy. They can't throw the ball, can't kick it well. They just have to run and run.
Do you have a net on the field goal, or do you just kick it in the
air? You need a whole mess of balls, I think.
By the way, the hardest part about that would probably be where would all the fans
that's
sit?
True.
You know, that would be the tricky part. It's much easier with a basketball court, which is obviously smaller.
Mm-hmm. Here's a conversation starter for later, maybe when we all get home to our wives. Michael left.
I'm not married.
Not in Justin. Gets
home, you hear that?
Gets home to my dog.
You hear that, ladies? Justin is. Nah. Anyway, how many power conference football programs cite presidents as their graduates? Both Army and Navy. Michigan does with Gerald Ford. And then who we got? Not a lot.
I have no earthly idea.
Well, we can think about this, huh?
Yeah, this is definitely a conversation for later.
It's a conversation like you have over a drink. It's wonderful stuff. Who would be the best football program to produce a United States president? My early guess is Michigan and Gerald Ford, who played there, I believe. Anyway, that's all I got. Sorry.
Yale, right? They've had some.
Yeah, but Yale's not major. I mean, major football.
Not Ivy League football. All right,
so let's say, getting back to Arizona's football schedule.
Which is why we're all presumably here. Yes.
I mean, we're not going to go through every single game because we don't know what the team is really going to look like. You know, but just on the surface, I mean, 6-6?
Yeah.
If they go 6-6 with this schedule, would you feel kind of okay about that?
It depends on what it looks like.
Right now,
I think, like I said earlier, I mean, I think if you go 6-6, but you know, you lose what, 3 of your last 9?
Yeah, 6-6. If they go 3-0 in the preseason, they'd be 3-6 in the conference.
I think that's a fire a coordinator situation. If you go 6-6 after starting 3 and go, you know, if you go 6-6 but 3-6 in conference play. I don't know. But again, we can't talk intelligently about this football team until we know who the dang quarterback's going to be.
Let's talk about that.
Michael Lev.
Yeah.
So what is Arizona's quarterback situation right now? We still don't know because
here we are. Here we go again.
After the ASU game, we all are left with the question that will Khalil Tate return to Arizona for next season? Still no updates. From the concrete update camp.
Here's what I know.
No on the record update.
Yeah, here's what I know. They have applied for an NFL draft evaluation. Okay. So you know, they're going to get that sometime before Christmas, and they're going to see what it says. You know, it'll say something like first round or second round or other. And then that will be another piece of the puzzle for them to sort of consider. You know, is Khalil Tate an NFL ready quarterback? No, I don't think anyone would make that conclusion, but we were talking about, you know, a little bit before the podcast that he's got great tools, right? And you're seeing the NFL game evolve. It's more, it looks, sometimes looks like the Big 12, right? I mean, that Monday Night Football game between, the Rams and Chiefs, so there were a lot of people, including myself, making jokes that it was just, this is happens in the Big 12 every single Saturday, right? Offensive coordinators are getting more creative. There is more, there is a place in the NFL now, more so than let's say 10 years ago for the quote unquote athletic quarterback or dual threat type of quarterback. So, you know, if you're an NFL team, you have this, the sort of, you know, this lump of clay, Khalil Tate, that you can mold into, some sort of new age quarterback 3 or 4 years down the line. Maybe it's a gamble worth taking with a mid round draft pick.
But my thing is I'm worried that a guy like Khalil Tate, he's going to enter the draft because, like I said, it's the flavor of the month. You have these athletic quarterbacks that can throw, but that can also run. You have a guy like Patrick Mahomes making no-look passes, Lamar Jackson, who I did not think he would ever play an NFL snap.
Right.
And at quarterback, at least. And now here he is as a starting quarterback for the Ravens.
With a very well-defined role and taking very few chances, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we'll find out next season whether Lamar Jackson's an NFL quarterback. I think he's running it now the way you would almost a college option team, which is they limit, I think, his opportunities to fail. Does that make any sense? I don't know. We live in an NFL, if I can cut you off first.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, this is Patrick Mahomes' league now. This is Mitch Trubisky's league, believe it or not.
Wow.
Right? This may be Lamar Jackson's league. I think a little bit, too, of Deshaun Watson with the Houston Texans. These are guys who have, you know, it's baseball term is loud tools, right? They can do a bunch of things really well. And, you know, maybe it's becoming in the NFL now, give me the guy with the tools and we'll see what we got, as opposed to a guy who's run a system in college or a guy who is more of a finished product. You know, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs and if Patrick Mahomes is going to be your quarterback for a while, would you take a flyer on a Khalil Tate in the sixth round? So you can have a guy, develop him in your system, and knowing that this is going to be the trend going forward, you can then trade him for a first rounder or a third rounder. Can you?
The Chiefs have taken gambles on kind of guys like this. DeAnthony Thomas.
Oh my God.
Like people were sort of unsure, like, does he project at all to the NFL? And they kind of turned him into a, you know, a kick returner and an occasional slot receiver slash running back. They took a big chance on Tyreek Hill, who had some off the field problems, but world class speed. And obviously he's now the best deep threat, in the NFL. They traded up for Patrick Mahomes, who very unconventional.
Which I thought at that time was a questionable decision.
Yeah, right.
Now it's paid off.
Well, you go system quarterback, forgetting, of course, that he had the strongest arm anybody'd seen in 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's say it was the Chiefs, right? And they spent a fifth round pick on someone like Khalil Tate. And they said, you know what, you're going to be our third quarterback, but you're also going to be our punt returner and a slot receiver. And we're going to use you sort of in a slash role, and you can develop your quarterback skills over the course of time.
Saints.
Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill.
Yep. Yeah. You can be Taysom Hill.
Yeah. Right. I mean, like I said, offensive coordinators now are they're way more open-minded about those types of things. Regarding the rating system for the grades, it's potential first-round pick, potential second-round pick, or neither.
Okay.
They've streamlined it. I don't think they've made it better. Before, it was first-round pick, second-round pick, third-round pick. Or no potential for the first three rounds, or no draft potential at all, which to me is like, oh, that's more specific. This new system with first, second, or neither is less specific. And that's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of leeway and there's a lot of success stories, after the second round. So I don't know. That's one option for Khalil Tate, and one that they're at least looking into, right? Another option is transferring, and I talked to someone kind of high up in the chain mm-hmm. about this, whom I can't mention who that is, of course.
Sources.
But I couldn't get a clear picture on whether Khalil conceivably would be a grad transfer. It didn't sound like he would be done with school by spring, but maybe one of those things where, you know, he could take some summer school courses and get in. I'm not even totally sure how that works. I remember the quarterback at Oregon a couple years ago. Adams, what was his first name?
Oh, Vernon Adams.
Vernon Adams, right. Yeah. Like he had to take some like math courses or something, right. Like all the way into like August before mm-hmm. he was eligible to play for them. I don't know if that would be different for a guy coming from another FBS school to do that, but we don't know that, and I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. And mm-hmm. if you're Khalil Tate, does it make sense to transfer somewhere, anywhere other than Illinois or, you know, Rich Rodriguez, you know, school to be determined? And we don't even know if Rich Rod's going to have a job this upcoming year as an offensive coordinator or a quarterback coach or whatever. Does it make any sense?
UCLA. I just spelled out UCLA with my hands here.
I was
UCLA makes a ton of sense to me. But here's the problem. He just spent the last 3 months basically at least showing on the field that he does not want to be known as the running quarterback. If he goes to UCLA, he is the running quarterback. He does not improve his NFL chances in the era of Pat Mahomes, in the era of Deshaun Watson, in the era of mm-hmm. Mitch Trubisky. Mm-hmm. He does not improve his NFL draft chances by running Rich Rodriguez's offense at UCLA. Does he?
Yeah, no. Or Chip Kelly's offense?
Yeah, it's Rich Rodriguez. It's all Rich Rodriguez's yeah. offense.
I mean, you know, you make a great point about the running, too, is that, you know, if he's going to go into the NFL, he has to have an open mind about
right.
maybe being a slash type of player, a slot receiver, a return specialist, mm-hmm. While also maybe working at quarterback. And, you know, you're going to get hit more in that case. And he has to be willing, you know, to be that guy. If you're a slot receiver, you're going over the middle mm-hmm. a lot.
Here's my favorite Michael Levism of all time. Durability is an ability.
Right.
This is not an ability he possesses at this point.
No, it's true. It's true.
To expect him to play wide receiver in the NFL, given sort of his injury history and his the fact that he's such an elite athlete that, you know, a little thing can really cost him in terms yeah. of speed and things like that. Maybe he's not the kind of guy you want getting smashed over the middle. I don't know.
There was a big prospect at USC named George Farmer.
Oh my God!
You guys remember
yeah,
him?
Of course.
Yeah, he was a 5-star
right
wide receiver. He's kind of like came right before, maybe at the same class. I can't remember. It's Robert Woods and mm-hmm. Marquise Lee, and he was like that. He was like a Ferrari, you know, like mm-hmm. any one little thing that would go wrong, like, and he just was. It kind of threw him off, mm-hmm. you know, and it kind of I think was a big factor in preventing him from right. ever realizing his potential. And we talked about Khalil Tate in that mold of like being a elite track athlete, you know, where it's kind of like the slightest thing. He just doesn't feel yeah. quite right. Yeah. You know, I think another, you know, big concern, if we're being honest here, is the maturity factor, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you guys saw how he interacted with me after a couple of games where I was asking him pretty basic questions about just interceptions that he threw, and he gave non-answers, mm-hmm. Which is, sort of, you know, staring off into the distance. I mean, NFL teams are going to pay attention to that sort of thing as well. And I think that's going to hurt him if he decides to do this. Mm-hmm. Option three mm-hmm. is come back. Right. And the big question with that is, can he and Noel Mazzone, you know, coexist mm-hmm. for another year after a lot of, you know, whispers about there being some friction between the two of them?
I can assure you that Sports Illustrated won't be coming around during the offseason. Right.
I will say this, though, is this trend that we see in the NFL will not go away, right? This will still be here a year from today. And so if Khalil Tate, running Kevin Sumlin's offense, can show that he's better than he's looked in the last year or so, if he can go out there and show off his rocket arm and show off his speed and play a full season without being hurt, I mean, now you've got a guy who in today's NFL may be the total package, right? I'm not saying he's a first round pick. I'm not saying that. But if he can go put up pretty good numbers, play a full season without getting hurt, show that he's not afraid to run, increase his completion percentage a little bit, show off his big arm when he can, all of a sudden, man, he's attractive to a lot of teams in the league. It is a copycat league more than any other league in any other sport. Mm. Everybody's going to try to run with the Bears are running with the Chiefs run, right? at some point they're going to hire, somebody's going to hire away somebody off both of those staffs. And then half the league is going to run what the Bears and Chiefs run, which is super athletic, rocket arm quarterback, little running back, blah, 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 strong, stout defense. Khalil Tate could be, I mean, a legitimate NFL prospect with another good year in college.
And we haven't, but we also, what I think what Khalil Tate needs to also show, he needs to prove that he's a winner throughout the entire course of a season.
Yeah.
Not just a 4-week stretch in October and not just a couple weeks after some losses like against Colorado and Oregon at home. He needs to consistently from the first week or week zero all the way until the last game against ASU show that he's capable of winning consistently.
What's his record as a starter? Do we know?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Is he a 500 starter?
Around 500.
Around 500, maybe a little bit under.
And he also, if they lose, he needs to, you know, act in a more professional manner, right? I mean, lose with dignity, right? And show some accountability and responsibility. You know, as bad as everyone thinks that Khalil was this past year, and obviously it was a disappointing season, 26 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions, and he missed, what, a game and 3 quarters, basically. That 26 touchdown passes, the 4th most in the Pac-12, behind Gardner Minshew, KJ Costello, and Justin Herbert. Second best passer efficiency rating, which is a weird stat that I don't totally understand, but is what it is. Somehow his was better than Gardner Minshew's, but whatever. And, you know, ended up with a 56.3% completion rate, which is not great, but it was up about 3 percentage points from where it was before he sat out the UCLA game. So aside from that one bad pass at the end of the ASU game, finished the season in kind of a high note. So, yeah, there's a lot of room for growth, and there's no question, zero question, that if Khalil Tate wants to be an NFL quarterback, the best thing for him to do would be to come back here and figure out a way to work it out with Noel Mazzoni.
Right.
There's got to be some – each side's going to have to bend a little bit. They're going to have to find – I've talked about this. Synergy. Mm-hmm. Find some middle ground where everybody can be happy. And then have – you know, show some improvement. Have a better year than you did this year.
Can I come in hot with my hottest take of the year?
Sizzling
hot take. The pass that he had towards the end of the Arizona State game that I have talked to Michael Levs 7 times about in 2 weeks was 68 yards in the air.
71 yards.
71 yards in the air. In the air. He overthrew a guy 71 yards in the air. Who was that? Was that Barry Hill?
Sean Brown.
No, Sean Brown. I'm sorry. Barry Hill had the ball hit him in the waist area late.
Yes.
Right? Barry Hill. Right.
Correct.
Sean Brown. If he connects with Sean Brown, and that is a touchdown, and Arizona goes on to beat ASU, my contention is not only, A, would that go down as a top 2 or 3 play all time in Arizona sports history, Arizona football history, but I think maybe Khalil Tate is turning pro. Because maybe you have just shown in one play, this is the clip they show when Mel Kiper is trying to explain why you're an NFL prospect, because he avoided. I mean, it's not all that different from the Pat Mahomes play that we saw last weekend, right? It's avoided trouble, avoided traffic, saw a guy running down the field and overthrew him. I mean, had the guy at what, 69 yards, and he threw it 71 or 73. Yep. That is still simply being able to make that play.
He was running to his left on that play too, by the way.
Simply being capable of making that throw makes him the most talented quarterback the University of Arizona has ever had. That doesn't make him the best one. He's a 500 quarterback. In terms of physical abilities and tools, that's uncommon stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't see that. I've watched a lot of football in my life. I don't know how many guys can throw the ball 70 yards on a dead run the other way.
Yeah, it was amazing, you know. You know, I think more about the interception in that game where he's got
the 2
Sean
turnovers
Poindexter
in the final 9 minutes. Yeah.
Right. I think, you know, I've watched that fumble a bunch of times, and I think it was more on J.J. Taylor. He kind of closed his hands a little too early on the handoff. But the interception, he had Sean Poindexter wide open underneath. And, you know, I've talked about this before. Like, every quarterback is a game manager, and there are certain situations where you need to manage the game better and smarter. And, you know, that's where he failed in that game. And I think a lot of the the blame. It certainly goes on the coaching staff for the way they manage the fourth quarter. But you know, it's a different conversation if he doesn't make that one turnover, which really, really shifted the momentum toward ASU.
But let's look at Khalil Tate right now, and let's just say somehow next season he's not here. And I think this is a good transition going into the current 2019 Arizona football recruiting class. You have a guy like Grant Gunnell. Mm-hmm. You talk about tools and the when you just look at him, he looks the part. He's 6 foot six.
He's Brock Osweiler. Go ahead.
He's a big guy. Yeah. He's tall.
He's huge.
And
he's,
I mean, that is a compliment.
And you've seen him in person, Michael. You went out to Houston earlier this year. You watched him play in person. And I like in your story that you included this whole gallery of all the information you need to know about Grant Gunnell. He said Noel Mazzoni has coached Josh Rosen and a guy like Brock Osweiler. And he told you, I mean, that's what Mazzoni wants out of me. He wants me to pretty much be that guy. And that's also a reason why they brought in Kevin Doyle. He's not as tall as Grant Gunnell, but in terms of style and what they do, they're similar. So,
and
I mean,
they're not similar to Khalil Tate either.
So,
that's for
like,
sure.
Where does that leave Arizona's quarterback situation? Because you still have a guy like Jamari Joyner who's on roster, who's like Khalil Tate, and it's just,
all right,
which route are you going to take if you're Noel Mazzoni?
If Khalil Tate is not here, it's a wide open quarterback derby, right? Grant Gunnell, I would say, like, I might call him the favorite, even though he's a true freshman.
I would say
Kevin Doyle, I would put number two. I know Noel Mazzoni. Look, he's here because of Noel Mazzoni and Noel Mazzoni's connections to that school, St. John's, there in the D.C. area. That's the reason he's here. And I would say Joyner, number three, and then Rhett Rod would be number four. I think Rhett Rod is the backup quarterback, like kind of no matter what happens, because he just gives you that security blanket, someone who can fill in a game, in a series. You know what you're going to get. He's smart. He's good in the quarterback room, all those sorts of things. But you're talking about a totally different looking offense. You're talking about, you know, going back to the ASU days for Noel Mazzoni, you know, or going back to that 1 year with Josh Rosen, at UCLA, tall pocket passer, going to run the offense. I'm going to hit the underneath throws. Going to get the ball out of your hands. I mean, the best plays that Khalil Tate made this past season were, there's no one open on my first look. I'm going to kind of run around. You guys run as far as you can down the field. I'm going to chuck it down there, and we're going to make a play, right? It was like playmaker type of offense, and this is going to be more of running the system, you know, doing what Noel Mazzoni wants kind of by the book. It's going to be completely different looking type of scheme. And, of course, it would be fascinating if that happens, because then we'll have ourselves a quarterback derby. I think it would be beneficial for Khalil Tate if they somehow were to imply to him, even if you come back, you are not guaranteed of this starting job. We're going to open things up again. You got to re-win it. I think that's always helpful, especially in his case where last year, you know, it was just kind of handed to him, and maybe that wasn't the best. You know, maybe he wasn't as hungry coming into the season as he was the year before. But yeah, totally different. And Grant Gunnell, he's the guy in this class. No matter what, I don't know if he's going to come out being the highest rated guy, but he's the most important guy.
I would say, talk about ratings. We've seen two-star prospects, three-star prospects coming to Arizona and thrive. I'll go back to what Rich Rodriguez always said. Whenever it comes down to recruiting players, if you want a really good college football player, you need a good high school football player. Grant Gunnell broke the Texas high school football all-time passing yards record and touchdowns record. When you think about the Texas high school football history, that's very significant. And for Arizona to pull a guy like that, especially his physical stature, 6 foot six, I don't know how much he weighs, but he's not a string bean. He's actually kind of built in college ready, which is why I think if somehow Khalil Tate leaves, I would automatically assume that Grant Gunnell is the favorite to win the starting job.
Yeah, the favorite, which doesn't mean that he's going to or that he really is ready. Remember, he did struggle in the like the 11, the Elite 11. You know, that sort of passing camp circuit a little bit last year.
Which is what hurt his rankings.
Yeah, and he's not one of those guys who's going to impress you in a workout. You know, he's more of a, you know, gamer. In a game, read the defense, make the right decision, get the ball out of my hands. Doesn't have like a He's not going to throw a 70-yard bomb, you know, but he might throw a 5-yard pass that turns into a 70-yard completion because he hit the right guy. He hit him in stride. He hit him on time. And then, you know, Arizona's always going to have pretty good athletes, right, at the wide receiver position, maybe not on the USC or UCLA level, but, you know, the Shun Brown types of guys who are, or the Samaji Grant or the Nate Phillips get the ball in their hands and let them do some things. He's going to have whoever the quarterback is going to have a great core of running backs. You know, that's probably the team strength heading into next year. The offensive line will probably be better. But still, if it's a freshman quarterback, it's, you know, no matter how prolific or productive he was, there's always a big learning curve there.
I seem to remember a 6'6" Texas born quarterback coming to Arizona who maybe wasn't the world's greatest athlete or greatest practice player, but did just fine. Did just fine in the Super Bowl, I believe, a year ago, too.
And he's going to be starting for the Philadelphia Eagles this upcoming weekend.
Right. I mean, if Grant Gunnell is Nick Foles, we all take that right now, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if we just say this is a guy who's going to come in, put up some big numbers, game manage, maybe not be a, you know, maybe be a third-round NFL pick 4 years from now, you take that. I think
100 times out of 100, right. You would take it.
And, you know, to me, though, I'm going to go the opposite way with you about him competing for the starting job. If you have a freshman, a true freshman, competing for your starting job, it means there's something up. There's something wrong, I think.
Unless
you don't see a lot of true freshmen starting.
Unless it's Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
You know, who was, of course, he was like the number one
player in the country,
in the entire class.
Right.
Grant Gunnell is not on that level, but who knows? Who knows? He might come in here and blow everybody away. I know he's going to be like mentally prepared. I know he's a really hard worker. You know,
he'll be here for spring ball.
He'll be here for spring, which is always a big help. So who else? You, Justin, you know these recruits better than Ryan or I do. But who
certainly better than
who
me.
Would be other than Grant Gunnell? Who's like your most intriguing guy? Would you say in this class?
There's a lot. Maurice Gaines is another one. He's a cornerback. He was actually supposed to be a part of the 2018 class, reclassified because he had a significant wrist injury, and according to him, school kind of fell off a little bit, so he had to reclassify to 2019. I think as a true freshman, he comes in a year older than a lot of these other guys, so he's a little bit more experienced. Transferred over to a prep school in Connecticut, and he's eager to come back to the western part of the United States to get back into some warm weather. I mean, but outside of him, I'm more interested in a lot of these junior college prospects because this was something Kevin Sumlin and the staff wanted to get into. They wanted not only size, but they wanted experience. And I know I tend to talk about the offensive line a lot here, but Josh Donovan, the offensive tackle out of Trinity Valley Community College, it's from College Station, Texas, so he's a Texas guy. He's 6'5", 330 pounds, and he's a junior college player. You think about all the boxes that Kevin Sumlin needs to check off for this offseason, he checks them all off. So in terms of intriguing prospects, I got to go with Maurice Gaines and probably Josh Donovan.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the junior college guys, I kind of view recruiting the same way as the NFL draft. Like, you're going to hit what? At best, maybe 50% of the guys are going to pan out. So to me, you know, the only way to kind of win that equation is to just throw numbers, right? So you want to have as many viable prospects as possible. That's why I would try to bring in as many offensive and defensive linemen as I could.
Yep.
If you bring in 8 and 4 of them turn out to be good, that's kind of what you want. From having some discussions with some people inside the program the last couple of days, the word I heard the most was depth. Like, we need depth. That's the difference between Arizona and a lot of these other schools. Like, they can sustain injuries and still be good. Let me look at Utah. All the injuries they had, and they still made it to the Pac-12 championship game.
Into the Holiday Bowl, where they'll probably win easily.
Very funny. they're playing Northwestern. That's another topic for another day. But yeah, so that's a word I heard a lot. They want to build up the depth in this program, especially along the lines. My most intriguing player, and I don't know exactly how to pronounce his last name, but Sylvain
Yonjwin
from Belgium. I mean, I have no earthly idea like what this guy is going to look like. Supposedly like an elite athlete, right? 6'4", 232. From Belgium, I mean, like Gerhard DeBeer, when he was here, was always kind of like one of the most interesting guys you'll ever talk to or meet. I imagine that Sylvain is similar. You've spoken to him.
Yeah.
Does he have a French accent?
Yeah. It's kind of French-ish. I mean, yeah. He still speaks pretty good English.
Isn't that the main language in Belgium?
They also speak Flemish.
Flemish.
Yes. Maybe it was a Flemish accent, but he's familiar with Tucson because he's got family out here.
Okay. But like, he's fascinating. Like, he could be amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Or he could sort of also be clueless and not really have good instincts for American football. But as far as just like who interests me the most, he would be the top one.
Well, the thing with DeBeer though is he had no intentions of playing football at Arizona. He was supposed to come to Arizona to throw discus. And he saw the stadium when he was on his visit here and was like, oh, what goes on in there? And they said, oh, that's where our football team plays. And at that moment, that's when he said, well, I want to play football. If I'm going to play in there, I want to play football. So DeBeer was very new to the game where Sylvain, he's been playing football over in Europe. But I don't know how good the talent level is in Europe when you're playing American football.
Not good.
So is he just destroying people over there? Who's
your guy, Ryan? Who's your most intriguing?
Can I homer for a local kid, please?
Yeah, sure.
Jordan Morgan is intriguing to me, and only because he strikes me as kind of a flyer on future growth, right? And, you know, we talk about junior college guys being good additions because they're sort of – they come out of the box ready to play. Right? Yeah. I mean, they are plug-and-play players. Jordan Morgan is the kind of, I think, elite-level athlete or the kind of person who could develop into an elite-level athlete here. USC, for God's sakes, thought enough of him to offer him a scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you've seen him play, Justin Spears, he's good, but he's not Chris O'Dowd in his prime at South Point Catholic good. He's not Mateo Mele a year ago at South Point Catholic good. He's somebody who they think can continue to develop and grow. And I think that while it's important if you're Arizona to get guys who can help right away, you need to hit on at least one Jordan Morgan in every class because you're not going to get 5 stars walking through your door. You need to sort of look at a guy differently, and maybe their development and strength and conditioning guys look at him and go, this is somebody who could develop and grow into a very good player.
And when I saw him play earlier this year, he was dominant. I mean, cause he's the best lineman in Tucson. So anybody that was matched up against him, he was going to dominate. Right. But it wasn't like you said, Chris O'Dowd or even Mateo Mele. And the thing I like about him is when you look at him, he almost looks like a little bit heavier tight end.
Right. He's proportional.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
He's not fat. Right. He's not this big bulky guy, which is why I said this yesterday on Twitter is if he spends a couple off season with Brian Johnson and that strength and conditioning program, I think you're going to see that 270 frame maybe turn into like 290, 295, but of really, really good weight.
Right. And they want him playing tackle, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Cause I mean, he moved over, right? He played guard as a junior. He moved over this year because his U of A coaches said, we'd like to see him more at tackle.
Well, no, wait, he played right tackle.
That's right. I'm sorry. Yes.
And then they moved him over to left tackle. Which I thought was smart because, well, what's the only position on the offensive line that they need help with right now?
Left tackle.
Unless Donovan Lye moves over there.
Right? Yeah,
that could be his future permanent position. I think any high school offensive lineman is a projection, right? I mean, you're sort of looking at like the athleticism, the feet, the size, which you're expecting them to probably add 30 pounds, or unless they're really overweight, to maybe drop the same. But I like the fact that Joe Gilbert sized him up and liked what he saw.
Sure.
Right? Cause Joe Gilbert, I mean, he's coached in the NFL, where, you know, he knows what like a big time prospect looks like. And the fact that he saw Jordan Morgan, liked what he saw, that kind of sold it for me.
I just thought it was funny. The day after USC offered Jordan Morgan, Joe Gilbert was at the Marin High School football game.
I would be too.
By the way, these coaches, they have the benefit of losing that game to ASU is they have been crisscrossing the country visiting prospects. I mean, they have been out on the road. Mm-hmm. I was told the entire staff was out on the road Sunday morning after the ASU game, including Kevin Sumlin.
Wow.
So they've hit it hard. They realize how important this is. They also sent out packets yesterday for future prospects, new set of offers going out for 2020. which is going to be the primary focus for them in January, which is the nice benefit of the early signing period. Assuming that you get, let's say, like 90% of the guys you expect to get, you can devote most of your time that next month to working on next year's class instead of worrying so much about what's going to happen in early February.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, so there are a lot of uncommitted guys right now. Mm-hmm. Who would you say is Arizona's most important recruit?
Of uncommitted type guys?
Of uncommitted.
Most important target.
Because I would say you...
I got two in mind.
Cornerback.
But yeah, Bobby Wolf.
Bobby Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Cornerback is a major position.
You need a cornerback.
Right. Four-star kid. I don't know the whole background situation. There might be some issues there, but, you know, when you look at the size, you look at the star rating, you look at the position of need, that's one. Jalen Curry, I think, is another one. Big wide receiver who played with Grant Gunnell, at St. Pius, X, in Houston. Or is it St. Pius the 10th?
Pius the 10th. He was a pope.
I'm gonna yield to the floor to the Catholic person here to explain how that works.
He was a pope.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Jalen Curry is kind of banged up a little bit his senior year, but put up monster numbers as a junior. He's a big outside receiver type who obviously has a connection with Grant Gunnell, and that is another position of need because that's where they suffer the most losses in this upcoming class. Mm-hmm. One more quick thing, by the way, before we get out of here is I think that PJ Johnson is probably going to be back next year.
That's a big addition.
Yeah, they've done the paperwork to get that sixth year, and he won like an academic excellence award. He tweets a lot about school and seems like he doesn't like it very much, but he also gets really good grades. So, you know, I think he might understand that, hey, if I come back and dominate in the Pac-12, maybe play at 15 or 20 pounds lighter than I did, I can put myself in a good position to be drafted. I also think it's 95% chance at this point that Jace Whitaker is going to be back as well. So there's a couple nice little senior cornerstones for your defense heading into 2019, which would be really helpful.
This is not quite the mass exodus that we had heard might be coming or that some had feared might be coming.
I think there's still going to be some roster churn with the fringe type guys who can figure out who it is. Because they didn't play,
right?
For whatever reason, right? Nathan Eldridge is leaving. We know that one for sure.
Right.
There are going to be some other names emerging, but as far as like some quote unquote frontline guys coming back, it's looking good with PJ and Jace.
I know that the U of A doesn't sell jerseys with players' names on it anymore for the whole or players' numbers on it whole trademark Ed O'Bannon case thing, but. They should make an exception for PJ Johnson. If he comes back, I mean, shouldn't he be everybody's favorite player?
Yes.
I mean, we can start with the grill. Let's start there. But I mean, not to drag this on, but PJ Johnson is kind of what's great about college sports, I think.
Great story, big personality. Mm-hmm. I think he might assume the Tuesdays with Sean role next year. Justin, Sean Poindexter, I think he spoke like maybe half of the sessions that we had where we get to talk to players on Tuesday. I could see PJ. I could also see Jace doing that a lot too. We really miss PJ Jace Tuesdays. Here in the media this past year because he was injured. Jace is a really good talker, confident kind of guy, and a very important leader that they missed this past year.
I think PJ Johnson, talking to him every Tuesday,
that'd be all right.
That'd be ideal.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be ideal.
He's really smart. Even though he plays defensive tackle, he knows the entire defense. Mm-hmm. One of those kind of guys.
Mm-hmm. He tweeted this after finals or after he won his academic excellence award. He said, "Don't let the gold grill and the dreads fool you." I'm a pretty smart guy.
I love that.
All right. So National Signing Day on December 19th.
Yep.
Myself, Michael Lev, we will be providing wall-to-wall coverage for it. And you can follow all of that on the Wildcaster app or on the Wildcaster Twitter page. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and as always, make sure you download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. So for Michael, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.